Nagyjából egy héttel ezelőtt adott egy interjút itt a Partizánon Magyar Péter, a Tisza párt elnöke, ami után egy petíciót indítottunk el azért, hogy végre itteni az asztalnál fideszes képviselők, sőt kormánytagok adjanak számot arról, hogy végül is mire használják a hatalmat, amelyet a magyar nép a kezükbe adott, hiszen ilyen interjúra a Partizán stúdiójában emberemlékezet óta nem került sor. 30 ezeren is többen írtátok már rá ezt a petíciót, amiért hálás köszönetet szeretném kifejezni a teljes Partizán stáb nevében. Nyilvánvalóan nem ez a legkívánatosabb formája egy interjú kérelemnek egy demokráciában, de ez épp eléggé mutatja a problémákat a demokráciánkban. Most már, hogy a petícióra nem érkezett válasz igazából egyetlen egy minisztérium részéről sem, ezért arra kérlek téged, hogy állj mellénk és küldj levelet a miniszteretnek azért, hogy vállalják az interjút itt a Partizánban. A leírásban megtalálod azt a linket, amelyen keresztül egy egyszerű formot kitöltve meg tudod tenni ezt a levélküldést. Mi is elküldtük már a leveleinket, eddig válasz nem érkezett rá, de talán végre az állampolgárok széles tömegeinek a kérését meghallják és talán válaszolnak rá. Talán végre elérhetjük azt, hogy föltessük a kérdéseinket, és ezekre a kérdésekre választ kapunk ennél az asztalnál. Mi készen állunk rá, mi bármikor hajlandóak vagyunk ezeket az interjúkat megszervezni, nektek kell segítenetek és nektek kell közbelépnetek azért, hogy ezek az interjúk megvalósuljanak. Úgyhogy kérlek, ha egyetértesz ezzel a követeléssel, akkor állj mellénk és a leírásban található linken keresztül támogasd a kampányunkat, küldj levelet a minisztereknek, hogy adjanak interjút a Partizánban.
The thing is that whenever the years pass, this 20% of increase in the next rate, it's reducing slowly mm-hmm. until the point that 3 to 4 years after, they come to the previous status. Now, in the big pilot we did in San Antonio, we know that the next rate, which is in the same direction as Superblock,
yes.
the Green Street, it has exactly the same number of cars that it used to have before the Superblock.
Sziasztok! Ma egy különleges felvétele jelentkezünk Barcelonából, ahol az Egyjövő Podcast Ki a felelős sorozatának első részét fogjuk felvenni. Ez egy 3 részes sorozat, ami arról fog szólni, hogy mit tehet a lakosság, és mi az egyéneknek a szerepe a zöld átállásban, és miért hárul rájuk szerintünk túlságosan sok felelősség. Ebben a 3 részes sorozatban azt keressük, hogy ki is valódi felelős, kinek milyen lehetőségei vannak, és ki az, aki legtöbbet tudja tenni, és ki a kevesebbet a klímaváltozás hatásainak csökkentéséért. Azt gondoljuk, hogy sokszor túlhangsúlyozzuk a lakosság és az emberek szerepét a klímaváltozás mérséklésében. Ezért ebben a sorozatban arra vállalkozunk, hogy különböző nézőpontokból járjuk körül, hogy mit lehet tenni annak érdekében, hogy az emberek természetesen válasszák a klímakímélő megoldásokat. Az első rész egy urbanisztikai megoldásról, innovációról fog szólni, a barcelonai szuperblokkokról. Ez hamarosan megérkezik a beszélgető társam is. A sorozat még további 2 elemből fog állni. A második részben arról fogunk beszélgetni, hogy mi történik a szemetünkkel, és hogyan hasznosul ténylegesen az a hulladék, amit nap mint nap remélhetőleg egy szelektív kukába dobunk. Ehhez a budapesti hulladék hasznosítóművet fogunk ellátogatni, és ott készítünk egy adást. Majd végül a harmadik részben Litkai Gergely humoristával, és úgy szintén klímapodcasterrel, valamint a Partizán Budapest önkéntesével fogunk beszélgetni arról, hogy miért hárul sokszor kiemelt felelősség a lakosságra és az emberekre a klímavészhelyzet megoldásában. Ez tehát az Egyjövő Podcast Ki a felelős sorozatának első adása. Hallgassatok szeretettel! Sziasztok! Nagyon szépen köszönjük, hogy velünk vagytok. Itt az Egyjövő Podcast Ki a felelős sorozatának első adása, amit angolul fogunk fölvenni. Itt vagyunk Barcelonában, és itt van már velem a vendégem is. És most angolra váltunk. So hello everyone, we are here in the middle of Barcelona Superblocks, and my discussion partner is already here, Daniel. Welcome. Thank you for accepting our invitation. Please say a few words about yourself and where are we in the surroundings? What are the super blocks?
Hello. Thanks for your invitation. It's been a pleasure to stay here with you. My name is Daniel Gina and I am an architect. I work for the Barcelona City Council and I've been the specialist of project managing. And in the last years, I have been the director of the technical office of Superblocks here in Barcelona. What is a superblock? Look, we are in a city like Barcelona, which is very compact, it's very dense. We are one of the densest cities in Europe. And at this point, we have a big problem with pollution, air pollution, by the traffic, mostly, cost. And also we have a big problem of acoustic pollution caused by the traffic too. We have a greenhouse gas effect of 3 degrees in the center of the city comparing to the surrounding.
That's super high.
Yeah. We have a lot of traffic accidents and we have a lack of green. We are a dense, we don't have big parks, but we need, you know, we have streets and squares and we need to put more green in this city. Yeah. So the Superblocks program is to transform the public space of the city, the streets, because we want to take some cars away from the streets and give this space to the pedestrians, to the people. Yeah, so our motto is let's put people in the center of the street. And that's what we try to do. And we put more green, more social spaces, more et cetera, yeah, to get the space and give it to the people.
Okay, and in our podcast, in the Edjövő or One Future podcast in English, we usually look at green transition topics. So if we approach this whole superblock urbanistic concept from a green transition point of view, how does it actually impact the resource efficiency in terms of energy, water, waste? What can you tell about that? You said that what the problem is, you said that what the solution, but how does it look like in terms of the metrics and the different green transition aspects?
Yeah, actually the best impact is about the traffic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have a concept that says that the most traffic lanes you give to cars, the most cars you will have.
Yeah.
So it's the opposite, it works the same.
It's very contrary to what you would think.
Yeah, so the best thing to do is to get rid of space for the cars and you'll have less cars and less traffic, so your air is less polluted. And in the super blocks in Barcelona, we have been decreasing around 20%. The number of the cars in the areas where we have been, you know, transforming the public space. But also, when you are transforming a street from a gray asphalt street into a green and pedestrian street, we have some strategies, yeah, to have, for instance, a save of water. Yeah, so we take the water in a space like this. We have this, we call it SUD. It's a sustainable urban drainage system.
Okay.
So here in Barcelona, when it rains hard. Yeah,
yeah.
We have only a few rains in a year, but we are Mediterranean climate. And, you know, when it rains very hard. So these green areas and these suits, they take the water, they filter it into the terrain.
Okay.
And we take it and use it for, you know, watering the new plants. Yeah, so
okay.
We are just, you know,
make
closing
it circular.
Yes. Exactly, yeah, that we want to do. And the same with energy. We've been working with some materials which are low energy, and those that we used to have in the city and we are applying it in the super blocks, we have been working with the production factories in order to decrease the number of CO2 that they produce. So we have been able to get like a 30-70% of reduction of the CO2 produced by the same tiles, the ones you can see.
Okay.
They are less contaminating.
Mm-hmm. Is this what you mentioned regarding the water recirculation? It's close to the concept, what we usually call the city as a sponge concept. So you can imagine that it's more like the whole environment, the surroundings are a sponge, and then you keep the water, and when you need it, you release it again?
Exactly. That's the same. That's very illustrative. Yeah, so this, we have some areas of the city which are like real sponge underneath.
Mm-hmm.
So we take the water from there. We generate like a big system of piping.
Okay.
Yeah. So we put all this water from whenever we take it and we distribute it all over the parks and you know, the green areas that we are causing in the city.
Okay, got it. So you mentioned that the main effect is decreasing cars. So how did this whole project affect the mobility patterns? How do people feel they can get around? Is that something what they get used to very quickly? Is it easier or harder? Because we are sitting in the middle of a square right now, and if I look around, I see like people, runners, bikers, people who are taking the dogs, but also like motorcycles, some cars are also here. So it's not a completely pedestrian only area. It's more like something which is where all the modalities can be found. So how should we look at this from a mobility point of view?
Actually, that's the best novelty in my opinion. We are used to see in Europe different places which are only for pedestrians, but our goal would be that one out of three streets in the city to become one of these green streets. Yeah, so you cannot make only pedestrian one out of three streets in the city. It's impossible because there are parkings, there are, people, they need to get with their cars to their houses.
You have an existing lifestyle, right?
Exactly.
Because you have an existing way of living, and that's hard to break from that completely.
Exactly. But the thing is that we have been doing this kind of street that the pedestrian is in the center. They walk in the center, literally and metaphorically.
Mm-hmm.
They are both, because they are in the center of all decisions too.
Okay.
But the people, they are in the center, but also cars. But the point is that those cars, we have to have in these streets only a few cars, the ones that need to go there because they have the parking there or they live there or whatever. And also that the cars that go to this kind of streets, they have to be very slow because they have to give priority to the pedestrians.
What is the limit, the speed limit?
10 kilometers per hour.
10 kilometers per hour, yeah. Okay.
Actually, we can see a motorcycle there, which is now maybe 20.
Oh, yeah.
In my opinion,
he's speeding, right?
Yeah, he's speeding. Yeah, but the point at the beginning, it was a kind of scary for us, even, you know, for technicians, to see that some cars were too fast, and so we think it could be some dangerous. But the point is that with some pedagogy and, the same pedestrians, they try to tell to the drivers, please do not speed. And now, after these years of, and all the pilots we've been doing, I think that the drivers, they are more respectful. So, those who are speeding are the less. As you can see, the people, they use the center.
Yes.
They feel safe enough to use the center. And that's the point. We want to get to this point. And about the traffic in the surrounding, we have been we in the green streets. Yeah, we have a reduction of around 80 to 90% of the cars that they used to have.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like 90%. An oasis. Yeah, that's a lot.
That's a lot.
You can see it's only, those cars that, as I was saying, the ones that come here for
freight. So these people either live here or they're just delivering something to this end destination
most of them,
and then going out?
Yeah, most of them are delivering.
Okay.
But some of them is that they park here, they live here, they have to help someone, an old person to go to their house or whatever, yeah?
And so, do the residents here, they have parking fees and they pay it per year, or what's the financial?
No, they don't pay for anything.
They don't pay.
No, the city council, they pays for the whole construction.
But to park their cars, you just register the number plates and
they
can come in?
They cannot park here.
They cannot
parking,
park.
Surface parking is not permitted
Okay,
here.
So you don't have surface parking,
only interior
traffic.
Parking.
Okay.
They park inside the buildings, yeah?
Okay, got it.
Yeah, we had this regulation around the 1980s,
yeah,
which all the new buildings, they had to have mandatory parking underneath.
Okay.
Yeah, so we have this study about parking, and we see now that in this central area of the city, there's more parking lots inside than the ones that people use. Yeah, so if all the cars of the surface wanted to park inside, they would have room enough. Yeah, so that's good, because that's a good point. And those cars, you can see, you park there, they are not parked, they are doing delivery.
They are delivering
to the stores
and everything.
It's a really commercial area. So the retail, they need to have this delivery system, because they need it for their normal use. So we thought, they normally do the delivery in the mornings.
Okay.
And in the mornings, the kids, they are at school. So if we allow them to use these green streets to do the delivery, they can just stop in front of the retail shop and just bring whatever they have to bring. But they can do it only from 9:30 in the morning until 4:00. Yeah, so it's the time that kids, they are at school. So whenever the kids, they get out of school and they use, this kind of street,
yes,
then the delivery cannot be done at all. Yeah, it's absolutely it's forbidden. Yeah, so we can free the space for the kids to be safer.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. And so all the flats here and all the buildings have like underground garages.
The new ones, yes.
The new ones, yes. Yeah. I suppose like if I look around, these buildings are from the 70s, 60s?
Actually, we can see here, this is from the 70s, but 70? That one is probably, it has 100 years or 150
years. Oh, yes. Yeah, that's from like the 20s or 30s.
Right.
So then residents in that building, do they also have a parking garage?
No,
or
they
don't,
but they can get, a parking from the new buildings.
Oh, okay.
They rent parking, they buy.
So you take the super block as a whole, you check how many residents do they have, what's the number of like underground garages,
right.
Then I suppose you have to give access to those who don't have in their buildings.
Yeah.
And they make that work. And then you say that people are okay to park inside. So I suppose that's one of the hardest to to overcome. If you don't have that, then I suppose it's harder to do this.
Yeah, right? I think that was the worst part, in my opinion. Because in other, you know, like normal streets of the city, they have the same problem. That the building that doesn't have a parking, they need to park underneath. Because the surface parking in Barcelona is very expensive. You have to pay a lot, like 4 euros an hour or something.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, people who comes from outside the city, for a short time, they use the surface parking, but not the residents, that they have their own parking. So that was something which was not very difficult to achieve.
Mm-hmm. Apart from the calm ambience, what it has, I suppose, like one of the major effects of this new mobility ecosystem, let's call it like this, is the reduced air pollution. Mm-hmm. Do you have like a measured level of air pollution, like before and after implementing the superblock concept, and how does it look like?
Yeah, actually, before we could build this scale up part, which is 5 kilometers of new green street, it was finished 1 year ago, 1 year and a half ago, in 2023. We had different pilots all over the city because we, you know, before entering to the center and transforming the center, we wanted to be sure that it was a good way to do it. Yeah, so we had in the last 10 years almost, we have been doing a pilot, and then we collect all the data about mobility, about pollution, about social, about economy, about different things that we want to, you know, be sure that we're doing the right way. Yeah. Okay, so in all these pilots we've been doing, we have taken the data, and it says that the reduction, it has different levels, yeah? In terms of particles, yeah, PM10, yes. PM5, it's more like general in the city. So in this street we can have a decrease of 3-4%.
Okay.
Yeah, which is a lot.
It is a lot, yes.
It is a lot, yes. Because it's like a very general indicator.
Yes. Yeah?
But if we talk about the NO2,
yes. Yeah, the which is one of the most pollutant or more harmful for the respiratory thing.
Exactly. That's caused by the diesel cars.
Normally. Yes.
Yeah. So in these streets we can have a reduction from 30-40%.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, which is a lot. Yeah. But the thing I was saying is about mobility.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that the reduction of mobility in the green street, it can be 80-90%.
The car,
the private car.
Yeah.
But you would think that the cars, they won't take this street, but they will use the next one,
exactly,
which is in the same direction.
Next question would have been that, how about the surrounding neighborhood?
Yeah.
So the surrounding neighborhood say that you are just like pushing all the cars to my street.
Right, but that's not true.
Okay, so that's not the case.
Yeah. We have this reduction of 90% in the green street, but the next street, it's been increasing like 10-20% in the beginning.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's been like in the next month it's a big decrease, but it's not as much as the number of cars that we take. Some of them they just evaporate. It's a scientific concept called evaporation of the traffic.
Okay.
Yeah? That means that some of the cars they will use other routes. Maybe mm-hmm. they won't use any more this neighborhood, but some of the people, some of the drivers, they will decide that they prefer to take a public transportation, or they prefer to walk in these green streets to go to work or to go to school, so they won't use a car anymore. But thing is that whenever the years pass, this 20% of increase in the next street, it's reducing slowly, mm-hmm. until the point that 3-4 years after, they come to the previous status. Now in the big pilot we did in San Antonio, we know that the next street, which is in the same direction as Superblock, the green street, it has exactly the same a number of cars that it used to have before the superblock.
And you need like 3-4 years to
recover.
That, like before the superblock.
Yeah. Okay. But the point is that the next street, we apply also reduction of the number of lanes.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the street surrounding here in the superblock, we had this intervention of they pass from 4 lanes into 2 lanes only.
Okay.
Yeah, because we had this bus lane on one side and we had this bicycle lane for fast bikes in the other side. So we passed, even though in the other streets, I'm talking about here in the new scale-up street, we have this reduction from 30,000 vehicles a day into more or less 21,000 vehicles a day. So even though in the other streets, sometimes it can decrease if you act in these streets to reduce the number of lanes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's exactly tying into one of our topics. We are making a special series in the podcast about, like, it can be translated in English, probably it sounds a bit harsh, but who's the one to blame? which means that is it like the government or is it the companies or the general population, the general public, the people to blame? And from your example, it really shines out that if you make a change which is ecologically or from a resource efficiency or from a climate perspective, it's a good change. Mm-hmm. It will not actually have those sort of like side effect or externality is what you would expect. So you can actually nudge the whole environment and the people in the direction where they can just like go about their lives in the same quality or actually not only extended quality or higher quality and they don't have the negative effects of pollution.
Exactly. There's something very special for me. Whenever I come here, I realize and I stare people's faces. And you can see, if you compare people's faces here walking and people's faces in other streets of the city, it's really different.
Okay.
People here is more relaxed. It's more like happy or something. They talk. They walk slower. Can you see there? Those guys are coming.
Yeah.
And they
do
just
walk slower.
Yeah, they do walk slower. Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
Even the workers. Yeah, we. There's this worker passing, a delivery worker.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's like, you know, slow, relaxed. Mm-hmm. So that's something about quality you were talking
exactly
a few minutes ago. That we are achieving. And for me, it's the best part. And, you know, the pollution is good, mobility is good, but this is good too.
Okay.
So the question was, sorry.
No, actually, it was more of a comment from my side that people usually think that, hey, if you put in an extra lane, then you will have like less congestion, but it's counterintuitive.
Yeah.
So actually, you can close down lanes, you can make it more climate resilient and also more comfortable for people to get by, and it will not decrease their normal quality of life. Actually, it's going to increase it, and it's not going to have like a negative spillover effect to surrounding neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, a city, if you want to transform a city, you have to do it slow.
Yes.
And because, you know, the transformation is so big and it affects a lot of people. Yeah, so but that's why we have been doing these pilots all over the city, and now we decided 3 years ago, we decided to scale up in these 5 kilometers. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
the
what
final
is the current size?
5 kilometers, more a little less than 5 kilometers of Green Street.
Okay, Green Street.
Yeah.
Okay, got
yeah.
it. Like
so
the cumulative or the added up length of all Green Streets, you mean, in the super block?
Yeah.
Okay, got it. Yes.
And the thing is that we need some time to take this data and to see that it's working all right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because we have to be very sure that what we are doing is in the right way.
You have to measure the effects, you have to evaluate.
So we think now we are collecting data and we see that the indicators they are really good. Yeah, but now we are in a stopover and we need to calm down. Yeah, to see, analyze all the data and see, you know, for the next years what we want to do, to decide as a city council, I mean.
Mm.
Yeah. So I want to say that we are not sure that everything is working all right yet. Yeah, because we don't have all the data still. Yeah. This street that I was saying a few minutes ago decreased from 30,000 cars a day to 21,000. It has more congestion than it used to have. Yeah, because there's less cars, but they have less space.
Less space, yes.
Yeah, so there's more time along the day that there's congestion there.
Yes.
So that's not good for the city. That's not good for the people. They lose their time there, and that's not good for air pollution in that area. So we need more time because we know that at the end it will go down the number of cars, so in order for it not to have more congestion, more than usual congestion, but we still need time to see.
That's what they usually call like acclimatization period, right?
Exactly.
So when it comes back to the normal before.
Exactly. So we are at this point there. So we had in the last years we had a big debate in media because it was somehow it was like a political decision, so all the media, some of the media were very against the super block.
Yes.
Yeah, so we generated this debate. We were every day in the media, like on television or a newspaper, and there was a lot of debate about the super blocks in the city. In my opinion, it was good. Because even though people, they were against the super blocks, because somehow it was like 50% of the people were against, very against the super block. Some of the people, 50% more or less, they were very for the super block. Yeah, it was like...
Okay,
that's
pretty much a tie.
Yeah,
okay.
But the thing is that my mother, whenever she went out dinner with her friends, they were talking about mobility.
Mm-hmm.
So half of her friends were very against and half of their friends were very for it. Yeah. But the point that is, if you have this debate, then even though the people who are against it, they know that something has to be done. Yeah, that we have a problem.
They're just pollution, not sure about the solution.
Yeah. And at the end, whenever you talk to someone who is not for the super blocks, they would say, okay, I know that a change must be done. But I wouldn't have done it. I would have improved the public transportation first. I would have. They realized that the problem needs to be solved. At this point, I think, okay, we won. Yeah, that the people for the super blocks won the debate because a change needs to be done.
Exactly. Yeah. And probably the resistance or the opposition is more like a general resistance or fear to change or against change, right?
Yeah. And exactly. It's you know, I'm a technician.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's really hard for me to go to a participation session and explain to those people how these streets will be like. First of all, I want to listen their needs. Yeah. But I'm a technician. I'm gonna collect all this information and try to do a good project for them to like. Yeah. But sometimes I need to explain them how this will be. But the thing is that until the point that they can experience it, people, they really don't think the way it's going to work. Yeah, so probably that they are scared of change and how that this street will change my normal life. Yeah, so at this point, now that we had the chance to build it, a lot of these people who were against the super block, now they are coming and say, okay, I need 3 minutes more to get to my house when I drive my car. But I have a treasure here.
Exactly. And you can walk 3 minutes more, right, which is good for your body.
And their kids, they can walk school in a safe way. That lady can use this scooter, slow scooter. Mm-hmm. And yeah, some of the people that I know, they say, okay, now when I go to work in my bicycle or my on foot, I walk like 2 to 3 streets more because I prefer to use the green street, even though it's a longer route.
I think you touched upon something which is super important, this whole public consultation process and these sessions. So, because if you cannot convince the public or show, I would say, rather just showing the benefits to the public that what it would mean for their lives, you just basically lost the battle. So what do you think? What are the main success factors in a public consultation session or in having a dialogue with the public that what would be the benefits?
In my opinion, the point is that you have to listen, active listening. You cannot get there and say, okay, I'm going to change, transform, blah, 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 blah. But, and you know, if the people, they cannot talk, they won't like it for sure. I mean, they need to be active in decisions, yeah? So that's why, and you know, after the 3 to 4 pilots we've been doing in the city before doing this big scale one, we learned that we had to listen. The first one in Poplano area, it was a crash because we didn't talk to the neighbors.
Was it 2015 or when?
In 2015, exactly. And it was in the summer that we made the works because it was like only with painting and furniture. You know, we call it tactical urbanism, which is very low cost.
Okay.
And we did it in the summer. So whenever the people came from vacation in September, it was like a big crash in media and you know, people were complaining because they didn't know what we were doing, even though that's a low dense area, which was the first pilot. Yeah,
and this is like the second phase where we're seeing right now.
Actually, no, we had the different other phases.
Okay,
we had the big phase very close to here in San Antonio, which was like in a dense area and it was like a big pilot.
Okay,
and after that, we decided to do this 5 kilometers of new street. We call it the scale up process.
Oh, the scale up phase. Yeah. Okay,
and but for the scale up one, that this 5 kilometers, we knew that what we had to do already, so we took this 2 years participation process where around 1500 people attended. We did it in two levels. The first level was like a territory level. We talked, we had this lot of meetings with the neighbors, with retail associations and everyone, you know, who was a stakeholder here. And we could talk to them and they were telling us and we were listening what, you know, where they need. And, you know, whenever we had these technicians who designed the project, they had all this information that we collected from the neighbors. And we, you know, after that, we could go back to the neighbors and explain, say, okay, this is working. We should change that. We should go there. And after that, you have the, you know, the best ambassadors of the super block. They are the neighbors because they have been liberating the whole process with us. That was for the territory part, but also we had this participation process with specialists. Yeah, we took this environmental specialist group and we did sessions with them, mobility groups and all over the city, and we had these sessions too with them, economical people, like
like all of the different stakeholders and practitioners. So and this 2-year consultation process preceded the construction work, so you only started the construction after these 2 years?
Exactly.
Wow, yeah. Okay. Yeah. It was quite like elaborate then.
Right. Actually, we had this 1 year only have it, taking input from the people. Mm-hmm. Then we started the project, the design project, for another year. And after that, the construction, during the construction, we had these participatory sessions too. And we went with the people to the works and see if it was all right or not, you know, and trying to listen the problems that the works, construction works, were causing to them. So yeah, it was like a big thing. But the point is that now that the best ambassadors we have is the real, the, you know, the neighbors in here.
Can you tell us a little bit more that how these like super blocks have an effect on extreme weather events? Like recently, and we are recording in 2024, end of November, recently in Valencia, but also in Barcelona, there were like very terrible floods, heat waves during the summer. They're like longer, more frequent, 40 plus degrees here in Barcelona. It's a big, big problem. So how do the super blocks alleviate this sort of like weather events, which are like super extreme and can cause like real harm to elderly people, but also to the general population, so for everybody?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's about health too. Yeah, we had this study yesterday in Barcelona with the medical system. They had this study that I think it was 3,000 people a year, they die caused by the pollution. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a health
thing. They
die
prematurely, right?
So, right, so. Exactly. Probably. But it's not only about environment, but also health of the people. But we are trying to build green streets. We call it green streets because we try to put the nature back into the city. Yeah, if you take space to cars and give it to pedestrians and to put more green, more space for the green, then you can have more trees, and they do these shadow areas, which are good for mitigation of the health, the heat.
The heat, yes.
The heat, yeah. And also about the CO2, about the traffic, if we can decrease 20% of the number of cars, we have this decrease of the CO2, so it goes, you know, it mitigates climate change. Yes. But it's the whole thing, it's holistic. I mean, all the decisions that were taken in the design of the streets, they were in a base of sustainability, environmental sustainability. So that's why we take the water and we do the cycle of the water. And that's why we have been using different species of trees and you know, all kind of ambrosias. So we can have this floration all over the year, so they can keep more birds to come here and eat all over the year, mm-hmm. not only in the springtime. And then we can have more green all over the year too. So this kind of decisions, we have been working with different specialists in environment and in green and lots of specialties. And they were, you know, giving all these inputs to the project. So in order to make it, you know, sustainability was in the center too, like people.
You mentioned that this is not the first phase. I suppose it's not the last either. So what is the plan? How do you look forward, if not like the super block concept, but Let me ask it in a more broader way. More and more people live in cities. Now more than 50% of mankind live in urbanized areas all over the globe. This really says to me that we have to make cities work for the people who live there. How can we transform our urban environments? What sort of solutions can be done which will make our lives better, healthier, easier to get around? Superblocks is one of them, but what can you mention and how do you look for the future?
Actually, we have like three big lines of transforming the city right now. The first one is about big transformations. We have been changing, for instance, in Meridiana area, in mm-hmm. Barcelona. The Meridiana is like a big avenue and wide avenue. It used to be like a former highway. for the cars to enter to the city. Yeah. So we passed 20 years ago. We had like 6 lanes on each side of cars and cars and cars.
6.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So now we, 20 years ago they reduced into 4.
That's like in American metropolitan.
Right. Yeah. Okay. It used to be. Yeah. Wow. It was like the new modernism in the 1980s. Yeah.
Okay.
But the thing is that 20 years ago they decided to reduce the number of lanes. Yeah. But now we just left 2 lanes on each side, and we can make like this green avenue. They still have cars. They reduced like from 100,000 cars a day into 70,000.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's 30,000 cars less a day that they are entering the city of Barcelona. Mm-hmm. And we have more room to put more green and more playground areas, etc. Yeah, so that's a big transformation there. The second principle or way to act is about the super blocks. But now we decided to take a break. You know, after this big debate, the new government decided to take a break and study, you know, collect the data and, you know, to see if we want to go on with this program. And the third one is about the proximity spaces, we call. They are interior blocks, spaces, like in the blocks, they have this area inside, which historically they have been building there, like workshops or parkings or cinemas inside, only in a ground floor level. Yeah. But now that the city government is buying these spaces and they are transforming into green. Yeah, so we can get more green everywhere, but not only in the interior block, but only in these spaces in between blocks or in, you know, close to streets that they are sometimes they are brown because no one does nothing there. But we collect all these spaces and we have this plan for transforming it into more green with the playgrounds, with the staying areas, etc. Yeah? And that's the where we are focusing right now. We have been studying the number of these spaces we have in the city, and there's lots of them. So we could increase like 20 areas of green in the next 2 years. And we are focusing at this point right now.
Okay. That seems like a massive change and a lot of like concepts behind it. And this really leads to my final question. What would be your advice to public decision makers, to city officials, to politicians, or to people like yourselves who are like working day in, day out in making our living environment in cities better? Mm. How we should approach change and what should we do in order to make it successful?
To the politicians, I would say to be brave, even though they don't have like the media, you know, for these big changes. If they are brave, they will succeed. That's my opinion.
Okay.
But they have to fight sometimes to get the, you know, about this environment. And about technicians, be sure of what you are doing. Mm-hmm. So make lots of studies of all concepts that you can imagine. Study it. And whenever you are sure that you can do it, do it. Yeah, if you have political support, you can do it. So collect all the data, start from a small part and then go, you know, doing this pilots. And, you know,
be
whenever you're
the people,
right, and they have to be patient to us too.
Yeah, exactly. It's like it goes both ways.
In both ways, yeah. But do a lot of participation, to listen to the people and try to put all these inputs in, and then to be, you know, be satisfied of your work. And look, whenever it's done, get there and see people's faces. And you'll see that these faces are relaxed and happy, calm. And then you'll think that you've been doing good thing for the city.
Danny, perfect closing words. Thank you very much for being here and for talking to us in this podcast.
Thanks, it's been a pleasure.
And thank you everybody for listening. Köszönjük, hogy meghallgattátok ezt az első részt, és jövünk hamarosan a kifelelő sorozat további adásaival. Sziasztok!